Who's that?
Please, get me out of here.
You want me to get wet on account of you? Hey, man, I got on Swiss cotton underpants.
I'm gonna drown, sir.
Come on, we'll get the time of death from autopsy.
Please!
Come on, man. It ain't worth it.
You are crazy. Come
on. You okay?
The good news, Terrence, is I'll okay you to return to full duty. The bad news is that you'll be experiencing moderate to severe back pain.
Recognition of his leadership and tenacity, Lieutenant Terrence McDonough.
This is who we're looking for. Name is Donald Godshaw.
You up to this?
Why wouldn't I be?
Still having problems with your back? You taking medication for it?
Only what the doctor prescribes.
You got any illegal substances on you?
I'm Dave, the guy you robbed. To make it right, you gotta come up with $50,000. Don't make me look for you, Terrence.
You mind stepping outside? I'd like to talk to you. I'm gonna give you a chance to make some money the old-fashioned way. With a cop protecting you.
You a crazy mother. I took you to a place.
It's amazing how much you can get done when you've got a simple purpose guiding you through life.
On my own.
Stand against the wall.
You can empty your pockets, dump out the handbag.
You want a hat?
Yes.
Where the sun always shines.
What are these iguanas doing on my coffee table?
There ain't no iguana.
Yeah,
there are. Ain't no iguana.
Where's the 15,000?
Put that gun away.
Kill all of you.
To the break of dawn, baby. You know the people are friendly there.
You think these guys care you're a cop?
Shoot him again.
What for?
His soul's still dancing.
Back at home.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith. Joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCrescio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
I am doing just swell. How are you, Mike?
I am also just swell. We are recording this podcast in a format that we have not done before, so hopefully this works.
Yeah, it'll be an adventure, and we're going to find out together.
Exactly. If it works, this podcast should sound better than it's ever sounded before. And if it doesn't
not,
work...
Whoops!
Exactly. Anyway... So, Mike, let's have some backstory on the movie we're talking about today.
All right.
Because that's how we always start this podcast. But before we get into the backstory of this current movie, I got to talk about another movie. I'm going all the way back to 1992, when independent filmmaker Abel Ferreira, known for crime movies like Miss 45 and King of New York, released what is still likely his most well-known movie. And that movie was called Bad Lieutenant, about a dirty cop in New York investigating a rape case while reckoning with his own demons. Harvey Keitel starred as the titular Bad Lieutenant and got a lot of acclaim for his performance. Martin Scorsese called it one of his favorite films of the 90s, and the critical acclaim of that movie brought Ferreira into the mainstream, at least for a little bit, and he was able to follow it up with a couple of studio pictures, Body Snatchers and Dangerous Game. And then 2009 rolls along, and acclaimed filmmaker Werner Herzog, known for films like Aguirre, The Wrath of God, Fitzcarraldo, and Grizzly Man, made his own movie called Bad Lieutenant, this one with the subtitle Port of Call, New Orleans. Possibly one of the most awkward titles any movie has ever had in the history of ever.
It's fitting that there's a subtitle for the subtitle in a movie starring Exhibit. A little internet meme joke for the people that don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty good, Mike. did you think of that on, like, a while ago when you were saying?
No, I actually just realized it right now.
That was off the cuff. That's pretty good. Anyway, so this movie, Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, has often been compared to Ferreira's film. A lot of people think it's a sequel or a remake because, obviously, they're both called Bad Lieutenant and because they both center on similar characters in similar stories doing similar things. Logically speaking, that would make it a remake or something. According to Herzog, though, he does not consider this a remake of the original or a sequel, and that the only thing this has in common with Ferreira's film is that it features a corrupt policeman as its central character. Ferreira, for his part, not been the biggest fan of Herzog's Bad Lieutenant over the years. In fact, Abel Ferreira has been quoted as being pretty angry about it. He has said, as far as remakes go, I wish these people die in hell. I hope I hope they're all in the same streetcar and it blows up.
Wow.
So yeah.
So Ferreira, really not clear on his opinion.
I'm gonna venture a guess and say he's not a fan. But Herzog's response probably frustrated him even more, saying that he had no idea who Abel Ferreira was.
Holy shit.
Following that up with, I've never seen a film by him. I have no idea who he is. I would like to meet the man. I have a feeling that if we met and talked over a bottle of whiskey, I should add, I think we could straighten everything out. Herzog did say that the film's title was probably a mistake, but so be it.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Now, I watched both movies, actually, in preparation for this podcast, Mike, and it's actually kind of remarkable how different the two movies are, even though they are essentially about the same thing. Ferreira's film is an intense, horrifying character study, dealing heavily with themes of religion and how hard it is to bring ourselves back from the brink of despair. And Herzog's plays more like a dark stoner comedy. Just very aimless in its storytelling, content to let the narrative just kind of flow in any direction it wants. And I like both. I think both are pretty good. But only one has Nicolas Cage delivering one of his wildest performances of all time. So that's the one that we're going to talk about today, Mike.
Goddamn right it is.
Yeah. Now, had you ever seen Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans before, Mike?
I don't think so. I think this is, you know, like we talked about the last few times now that we're in 2009 and all this stuff. We're in living memory now of these movie releases.
Right.
So I definitely remember this movie coming out and its insane title and stuff, but I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing, if I've seen any of it.
Okay. Yeah, I had seen this once before, and the reason I had seen it, I saw it my freshman year of college. I very distinctly remember watching this because one of my first friends that I made at college, one of the first things we ever bonded over was our shared love of Nicolas Cage. And we had one day where we hung out in my dorm room, and we had like a Nicolas Cage kind of marathon, and I showed him Vampire's Kiss, wow. And he showed me Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, and both of our lives were changed that day, I believe.
You've never been the same since.
Exactly. There's a reason this podcast exists, and I believe it is because of that day, Mike.
Wow.
And because you've allowed this to exist for
I rue the day, then.
Anyway, so Nicolas Cage stars in Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans as Terrence McDonough, the titular Bad Lieutenant, who spends the majority of the film either on cocaine or heroin. When you're watching the movie, you're thinking to yourself, you know, I think this guy might not be a great lieutenant. I might even describe him as a bad lieutenant.
Yeah. I think that's fitting.
Yeah, his love interest, a prostitute named Frankie Donenfeld, is played by Eva Mendes, which makes this a Ghost Rider reunion, which is pretty interesting. And from there, this movie just has a pretty wild cast, Mike. When you were watching this, did you expect the amount of people to show up in this movie?
No, that came in? Definitely not.
Yeah, so first you've got Val Kilmer in this movie, playing Cage's partner Stevie Pruitt. Then you've got the voice of Chucky himself, Brad Dourif, as Cage's bookie, Ned. Dourif was actually also in Amos and Andrew, so that's another Cage reunion there. And like you mentioned before, rapper Exhibit plays Big Fate, the drug dealer Cage is after in connection with the murders. Jennifer Coolidge, a.k.a. Stifler's mom from American Pie, plays Genevieve, the woman married to Cage's dad. Firuza Balk, who played Dorothy in Disney's Return to Oz, but who I had a crush on back in the day for her role as Vicki Vallencourt in The Waterboy.
Wow, yeah.
She is in this movie playing Heidi, a cop who Cage goes on a date with. And then you've got Michael freaking Shannon showing up for just like two scenes. He's only in two scenes in this movie as Munt. And he also appeared with Cage once before, Mike, in World Trade Center, a very different kind of cop movie.
Yeah.
to say the least. And then Von D. Curtis Hall, who played the reporter Ben Urich on Netflix's Daredevil. He is in this movie playing James Brasser, the police chief. Denzel Whitaker. Now, that's a name that you may not know, but most people at this point have definitely seen him because he played the young Forrest Whitaker in the flashbacks at the beginning of Black Panther.
Wow. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, he plays Daryl, the young witness of the homicide in this movie. So that's pretty wild. And his last name is Whitaker. He is not related to Forrest Whitaker at all. He just has the last name Whitaker and looks exactly like him.
That's what they want us to believe, Mike.
It's all a conspiracy, man. Mm-hmm. And finally, my boy Shea Whigham appears in a couple of scenes in this movie as Justin. He is best known for Boardwalk Empire, but he is one of the great character actors working today. Recently, I think a lot of people would know him for his memorable role as the guy in Kong Skull Island who sacrifices himself for no reason.
Yep. Yep. Got it.
Yeah. Now, the film was written by William N. Finkelstein, who mostly wrote for television and primarily for cop shows, like Law & Order, L.A. Law, Cop Rock, and NYPD Blue. I had to mention that he worked on Cop Rock. I don't know if you're familiar with Cop Rock, Mike.
I feel like you've probably explained it, but I don't remember.
Cop Rock was a show that lasted for like one season in 1990, and it was a police drama, but it was also a musical, hence Cop Rock. I've never watched like a single actual episode of Cop Rock, but I've been obsessed with the idea of that show for a very long time. And of course, it was directed by Werner Herzog, 3 years after his previous film, 2006's Rescue Dawn with Christian Bale, and just 1 month before his next film, which was 2009's My Son, What Have Ye Done, which starred Michael Shannon. And this movie opened in limited release and only ever made it to a total of 96 theaters, so it did not do great at the box office. On a budget of about $25 million, this made about $10 million. But I mean, it never really had the chance to expand and, you know, do that. So, what were you seeing on November 20th, 2009, if, Bad Lieutenant Protocol New Orleans was not opening near you, Mike? Well, you could have seen Planet 51, an animated kids movie in which The Rock plays an astronaut who lands on a planet populated by green aliens and live in a suburban 1950s setting. You may remember the trailers and poster for that movie, but, yeah, it's not supposed to be good. You could have seen the movie that won Sandra Bullock her Oscar, The Blind Side, was released on that day, which is a movie that I absolutely can't stand. Or you could have been one of these swarms of teenage girls who were out seeing the second Twilight movie, New Moon, on its opening day.
That's the one. You got me.
That's where you were, Mike?
I camped out.
Were you Team Edward or Team Jacob?
Team Jacob, duh.
Yeah, obviously. Come on. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Bad Lieutenant Protocol New Orleans reads, Terrence McDonough is a drug and gambling addled detective in post-Katrina New Orleans investigating the killing of 5 Senegalese immigrants. So, Mike, what are your overall thoughts on Bad Lieutenant Protocol New Orleans?
My first reaction is just, wow. That's mostly it.
We can wrap that up there. That's about it.
Yeah, I think that's enough. We can cut it. No, this movie is absolutely bonkers, and I'm not even sure if it's in a good way. There are, of course, the choice cage scenes, you know, the cage juice we're all looking for. There's a lot of that going on in this movie.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really serve anything, I don't think. I mean, I don't know. It's basically Cage unhinged and just on 11 and also dope. And it's, I know I'm sort of preemptively getting to your question coming up, but this reminds me of Vampire's Kiss, mostly. This is one of those kind of, like, throwback early Cage movies where he's trying to make a name for himself. But really, it's the downfall of Cage, I feel like. We're in that era now, again, forever. This is our lives, and you've done this to me, Mike. I don't regret it at all. It's fine. the movie is just, like how you were talking about it, it's just so disconnected from itself. Like, none of the things really flow together, none of the scenes. About an hour in, we consolidate into a plot, and then we abandon it 20 minutes later.
Yeah.
So I kind of just mostly watched this movie, and it happened. I don't know. That's basically it.
I mean, I think saying you watched it and it happened is probably a pretty good description of what the experience of watching this movie is like. I will say that I like it quite a bit, and I am a fan. I think this movie is a hell of a ride. It's just, you know, and you're right. There's not so much of a plot. Like, there is, like, a plot, sort of, but it's really more like a lot of loose connective tissue just between events that just happen.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the idea, though. It kind of lulls you into this world that Cage is living in and kind of gets you into his worldview. I really dig it. I think Herzog appears to be having a blast in this movie, and Herzog is a very weird dude. And, you know, I think his sense of humor is different than most people's, and this, to me, is a Herzog comedy. You know, I think it's a very funny movie at times, and, you know, Cage gets to let loose. It's dark, and it's fucked up. It's often pretty funny. And I sort of want to, like, this movie feels like Herzog's attempt at a stoner comedy. And I sort of want to program like a triple feature that is this movie, The Big Lebowski, and Inherent Vice.
Wow.
Just to see how it, I think those movies actually fit really well together. Yeah. All of them are, you know, dark stoner comedies in which the protagonist is trying to piece together a mystery. Like, it could work. And, you know, they're very loose in their plotting, and there's a bunch of subplots around that don't go anywhere in all three of those movies. And, like, I think it could be a really interesting triple feature. Or maybe that's just too much nonsense. But
maybe.
But I don't know. I find I really enjoyed it. And I mean, comparing it to the original Bad Lieutenant, it feels like, I mean, it's complete night and day. I think the original Bad Lieutenant is a movie that I like more. I think that movie's like a very tight hour and a half, and it tells a very complete story, and it has a very complete arc for its character, and it has a very like powerful ending, and it's just really intense and crazy. And Keitel is giving it his all in that movie, and it almost it like that movie verges on becoming Bad Lieutenant Porter Call New Orleans at times. Like, it almost feels like it's getting it's getting over the top, but it really straddles the line really well to become this very tense you know, character piece. And Bad Lieutenant Porter Call New Orleans just obliterates that entirely.
Yeah.
But I like that about it. I don't know. I think a lot of that is in Cage's performance, where I guess we should get into the question now. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie?
Just goddamn, dude. Like, and I'm not even, I can't even tell if that's good or bad for me. like I said, it has the Cage juice, right? It's a lot of that happening where he's just shouting and stuff. But at the same time, there's a couple scenes that, like, he's doing the, like, evil, dirty cop thing, and I was believing it and was sort of, like, engaged in his character, and then it's just, I lost it. I don't know. This movie didn't connect with me a whole lot. You know, I didn't find myself having fun enjoying it that much, but Cage is still doing his Cage thing, and that, I guess that's really all I can ask for, Mike. In these 2009 movies.
Fair enough. Yeah, so I think Cage's great in this movie. Just straight up, I think he's fantastic. And I think you mentioned that the movie that reminds you most of is Vampire's Kiss, which is another movie that I love. I love Vampire's Kiss.
Fair.
But, you know, and I think that's a fair comparison. This is 20 years after Vampire's Kiss, and it feels like he's channeling that same energy, but in a different kind of way. I feel like Vampire's Kiss is a performance that is over the top pretty much from moment one. Whereas I think in this movie, like, it's, you know, it's off kilter definitely in its first hour, but I think in the second hour it really escalates. And it feels like the more fucked up Cage's character gets, the more insane his performance becomes. In the movie. So it's a very, like, gradual thing. So by the end of the movie, you're like, holy shit, this guy's nuts. But when you're watching it at first, it could be mistaken for, like, a remake of the original Bad Lieutenant. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, working with Werner Herzog on this film, did he push you? What was your relationship like?
Werner really didn't need to push me. Mm-hmm. You know, I already had an understanding of what he could or couldn't tolerate from his previous movies. I knew where I wanted to go. I knew that this was the Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, and therefore I had to have behavior that would be outrageous and be fun to watch in terms of its badness, yes, so to speak, and that people would go to the movie to see that, to see the train wreck of his personality, if you will. So one of the things that I did want to convey was the hideousness of the drugs. You know, I felt the way I could be responsible with the material was if I made the drugs so unattractive in terms of my behavior and even my facial expressions that nobody would ever really want to do them. But Werner's not really into message movies. He's more about, let's celebrate the bliss of evil. Right. And I understand as well, because that's where the comedy is in the movie.
And I think what's interesting, like, I think he actually, like, really effectively portrays how much worse this character gets over time. And he starts off bad. Like, he opens the movie, like, mocking a dude who's drowning. Like,
right.
You know, and he does save that guy, but still, like, he's mocking the guy who's about to drown. Like, he's like, oh, you want me to get wet for you? I have silk underwear on, and, like, all that. And, you know, he's has to take painkillers, and then he ends up in this whole addiction thing with cocaine and heroin. And, I love watching Cage act batshit insane. But what I thought was kind of interesting about the movie is that his voice changes, like, halfway through. That wasn't just me. That was
no. Like, his accent changes a couple times, I think.
You think so? I feel like for the first hour or so, it was fine. Like, it was,
yeah.
You know, it was normal Cage voice. He was acting a little, like, weird, like, out of it, over the top a little bit. But I think there's the scene where he nearly kills the old lady, and then immediately after that scene, his voice just completely changes, and he starts, like, mumbling a lot of his words, and it becomes like, I think I described it as a 40% Al Pacino and a 60% Dustin Hoffman and Rain Man. Where it's,
where that's just, actually just, really spot on.
He's just kind of talking like this, like
yeah,
like definitely just talking like this, and like it's, you know, it's
holy shit.
And yeah. I don't know. Like it seemed like a very conscious choice, though. And then by the end of the movie, he kind of reverts back to his original voice. So it's just that like last stretch of movie where it's like the more trouble that Cage gets in, the more his voice like deepens or changes and stuff like that. So there's like nuances to this performance that I think are really interesting. And then at the end of the movie, everything just like suddenly works out. Right? Nice. Like everything at once just like works out. Like Shea Whigham's like, oh, I'm taking the hit off you, and like Exhibit like dies or whatever. But there's a scene in Cage's office, like a bunch of things happen at once, and I'm blanking on like everything that happens. But like Shea Whigham says, I'm taking the hit off you. The murder gets solved or something, and like
he hits it big on the football bet. And
yeah, his bookie comes.
The parking tickets are taken care of, and yeah.
Yes, yeah, like everything that was a problem throughout the entire movie just suddenly is fixed in like 30 seconds yeah. without Cage having to do anything. You know, and it's that, I think that's pretty funny. But like, as soon as that happens, like you see Cage's performance change, and he starts to like, you know, his voice kind of returns back to normal. But then the implication at the end of the movie is that it's just like a never ending cycle where like it's just going to keep happening again. So it seems like he's going to, you know, revert back to his shittier ways. But maybe he's not. Who knows? Like that, yeah. That final shot, it leaves a lot to be interpreted, or it doesn't. I feel like that final shot is just Herzog fucking with people. Like it's
yeah,
it could definitely be that. But so you mentioned Vampire's Kiss mm-hmm. before, so we're going to talk about how this role fits into the roles we've seen Cage play so far. And Vampire's Kiss is definitely one to call back to for sure. Yeah. Oddly, I think the role it reminded me the most of was Matchstick Men, in really? A weird way. I feel like the actual performance that Cage is giving, like it seems like a very deliberate kind of jittery, you know,
right?
Like he has, and it's all like the vocal tics and like the way he's moving around. Like it just feels like his performance from Matchstick Men. I think Vampire's Kiss is definitely an apt comparison too. Is there any other roles that you that came to mind when you were seeing this movie, Mike?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I think Peggy Sue Got Married, if only just for the voice. It doesn't go that far, like as it did then.
Yeah.
But I think it's just it reminded me mostly of those early movies that we were like, you know, Vampire's Kiss and. Not Zondali. I guess that's set in New Orleans. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That is set in New Orleans. All right. I'll accept it. The judge will take that.
Thanks. Just those early couple movies where it's just absolute insanity and he's just kind of going crazy. And really, Vampire's Kiss, to me, it stuck out the most. One, just for the how unhinged he is in this. But also, sure. Like, he ends up looking really pale. And he's got, like, this weird hunch limp thing he does. Like, with his gun just, like, hanging out of his pants. And it just sort of, like, he's just, like, morphing into another person. Which is even yes. personified by, you know, like, or not personified, but indicated by the voice change, right? So, I don't know. That was the movie that stuck out the most to me. But what else? Did anything else jump out to you like that?
That was a good call on Zondali that it takes place in New Orleans. I will say that Cage has played a cop twice before in It Could Happen to You and World Trade Center. Although in those movies, he seemed like a pretty good lieutenant.
yeah, I do appreciate Herzog in his weird, dark, twisted humor kind of way. Right, like you said, he starts off as a bad guy and he's mocking the dude who's drowning and stuff in prison. And
right.
ultimately, he does the good thing and saves him and is immediately punished for it. He has a lifelong back injury that leads him down a pain or addiction to strong drugs.
Right. Well, that addiction, that's only like 6 months later the rest of the movie takes place, I think. So that addiction kicks in real quick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, he does, like, the one good thing, even though he's being shitty about it, and he's immediately, like, thrown into this, like, life of back pain. So, yeah, it does seem like there's this... you know, Herzog is a very existentialist filmmaker. Herzog himself has become a meme at this point. Just, you know, people like joke about Herzog narrating things and be like, oh, the bleak emptiness of the world. That, you know, this man looks into the dead eyes of a fish and sees nothing but sorrow and like something along those lines. That was a ad-libbed Herzog line. You can have that, Herzog.
I believed it.
If you're listening, Werner Herzog, you can have that one. But it's... but yeah, like he has become somebody who people like joke about in that sense. But he, like, all of his films kind of have that through line. And I think Bad Lieutenant, even though it is, you know, in general, like a I think that's his attempt at comedy. And, you know, you can debate how funny this movie actually is. Like, it's very dark. Oh, yeah. For sure. You know, I think it is emblematic of his worldview that is personified in all of his movies. But are there any moments or scenes in this movie that stood out to you, Mike? I mean, there's got to be a few.
Well, yeah. I'm going to pick the two ones not specifically related to things happening in the scene. But there, it's this the weird Herzog like film stuff he does. In particular, there's the scene when Cage is going to talk to the highway cop to get the speeding ticket for his bookie's daughter taken care of or whatever, right? And he's like, it's a car accident where a truck or whatever hit an alligator and flipped over or some weird New Orleans shit. And the scene happens, right? And then the scene just ends with this like handheld close up of an alligator mouth on the side of the road. And then, like, we pan back to its eye, and we just sit there for a bit. And then, like, just weird that happens, right? And then the same thing happens later when Cage and his team of questionable lieutenants are staking out somebody's house. Not Exhibit's house. I can't remember the whatever. One of the criminals' houses. And there's two iguanas, which may or may not be there.
Well, they're definitely not there. It's
no?
Well, Cage sees the iguanas, but nobody else sees them. So it's, you know, it's Cage hallucinating.
Oh, all right. Yeah, that makes sense.
How long has he been in there?
About 20 minutes.
Who else?
His girlfriend, at least one infant. That's as far as we know.
What are these fucking iguanas doing on my coffee table?
There ain't no iguana.
Yeah, there are.
There ain't no iguana.
What the fuck is that? It's fucking iguana. Set up.
I mean, I believe it. Yeah, but then we have the same thing, right? Where it's the handheld camera close up on the two iguanas, and but like for that one's way longer than the alligator one.
There's a song that goes along with that too. Yeah,
yeah. Nick Cage and Val Kilmer standing in the back of the frame, just looking off screen while we watch these iguanas. So those definitely stood out.
Yeah, those do definitely stand out. I mean, the gator scene I didn't remember because I'd seen this movie once before. The iguana one was stuck in my memory. Like that was the one that.
Really?
Like when I thought back to Bad Lieutenant, that was the moment that I was like, okay, I remember the iguanas. That's okay. And as I was watching the movie, like some stuff like triggered some memories for me. But like the iguanas was the one that I could like pinpoint to and like, oh, the iguanas, Bad Lieutenant. Like that's just, that's it. But yeah, the gator scene is interesting too because it pans away from the dead gator in the street and kind of goes into this other gator that's on the side of the street, mm-hmm. Looking at the dead gator, and it's the same thing, like the handheld gator cam, gator cam 2009. And it's just this like long lingering look, and it's, you know, Herzog kind of observing the nature of animal versus man or whatever. I don't know, but
yeah, just some weird Herzog shit.
I'm not sure exactly what it meant, but I think it was compelling. Like nonetheless, I was like transfixed by it. But there are a ton of scenes in this movie that just stand out to me. I mean, I think you know, the iguana one is the one that I remembered very much. But the one that really like triggered in my mind, like as soon as the scene started, I was like, oh yeah, this scene, this is amazing. Was the scene where he nearly kills the old lady in the retirement home?
Yeah. Yep.
Which is, I think, probably, like, one of Cage's finest moments as as Nicolas Cage.
I want to know where Daryl is.
My God.
Nobody saw me come in. Nobody knows I'm here. This old woman's going to run out of air, and you're going to have a tough time convincing people that it wasn't you who did it to her. And even if you do convince them that you didn't kill her on purpose... You're still going to have a tough time selling them that you took care of her. What the fuck?
God.
Now listen to me. Where the fuck is he? I said, where the fuck is he?
He's on an airplane. Miss Antoinette bought him a ticket and sent him to live with her family in England.
It's okay. That's a good girl. Suck it up. There you go. That's it. Take it in. That's a good girl. Take it in. Good. 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 That's it. Breathe. Maybe you should drop dead, you selfish cunt. You ever think about your kids? Or your grandkids? Huh? Sucking up their inheritance through that fucked oxygen tube? And Benny's fucked intensive care? You fucks, I hate you. I hate you both. I should fucking both. Just right now, I should fucking kill you fucking both! You're the fucking reason this country's going down the drain.
Like, it's like a three-minute scene, and, you know, it's the old woman in the wheelchair being wheeled in by her nurse, and, like, the door is open, and, like, the door closes, Cage is behind the door, and he's just standing there shaving.
I forgot about that.
Standing there shaving with electric razor, just, like, kind of, like, going all over his face, not even hitting anything, and just,
yeah,
and just, like, you know, talking to the nurse about, like, where her son is. Daryl was her son, right, I think? Her
grandson.
Nephew or something like that. Yeah. But, like, trying to find out where Daryl is, and she's not going to tell him, and so what he does is he takes the oxygen tube out of the old lady's nose, and she starts suffocating, and he's just like pressing her for information, and then he just brings out his gun too, just for extra effect. Then she finally tells him, and then, like, he puts the oxygen tube back in, and then he just starts shouting at them for like a minute, telling the old lady how, like, she's what's wrong with America, how, like, right, how she's burning up her kids' inheritance and stuff like that. It is crazy.
Yeah,
that's me. Prime Cage right there.
Yeah, I mean, also the Cage freakout in the pharmacy. I mean, most of this movie, it's basically a 2-hour Cage freakout.
Sure.
But when he goes to pick up his prescription in the pharmacy, and the nurse is on the phone and won't fill it for him, so he just goes over the counter and is just shouting at her,
right,
and also pulls out his gun, I think, or throws money at her or something like that. I can't remember. It's insane. It's just
yes,
ridiculous.
And that's kind of the first moment that you see Cage start to freak out a little bit, too, which is actually interesting because, you know, there's a scene in Matchstick Men where Cage also freaks out in a pharmacy. It's the best scene in Matchstick Men.
Yeah. I think I conflated them when I was watching that. I was expecting him to yell, have you ever been dragged out into the sidewalk and beaten until you pissed blood. I thought that was going to happen in this movie, but I forgot that was Matchstick Men.
You forgot we already did that one.
Yeah.
We've done so many movies now, man. It's crazy.
That's wild.
But yeah, so there is the old lady in the retirement home and the pharmacy and stuff like that. What did you get out of the ending, Mike? The ending of this movie in which Cage reunites with the guy that he saves in the beginning.
Yeah.
Right?
It's Chavez, the end, I think.
Yeah, and you know that guy sees Cage in a hotel in like a low moment. And it's a moment that echoes a moment that happens earlier in the movie too. So we should back up a little bit and talk about that. So Cage, early in the movie, he's hanging outside a random club, sees this couple walking through the parking lot, and like pulls over and, you know, starts like harassing them about like drugs in the club and stuff like that. And then he makes a guy watch as he fucks his girlfriend in the parking lot after busting them for drugs.
Yeah. After smoking their crack for them.
Yes. It is pretty insane. That's a pretty wild scene. And then the movie ends with him about to do the same thing, essentially. He's pulling over and, like, harassing another couple outside the club. And I don't think... Do you really see what happens right after that?
No, I assumed it's the same thing, though, because he ends up in a hotel with drugs afterwards.
Right.
In the next scene.
Right. I don't think it shows if he has sex with the girl in that one,
right,
too, or not. But he does get the drugs, which is what he really cares about anyway. And so, yeah, he ends up in the hotel with the drugs. It's another low moment. And this is after he has, like, sort of redeemed himself almost. Like, he's the murder has been solved. Like, everything starts to work out, and he's just falling back into his old habits. But then when he has these drugs, he runs into this guy who he saved in the beginning of the movie, and the guy's so grateful to him. He's like, wow, you saved my life. Like, he doesn't even care that Cage was an asshole when he was doing it. And
right.
Which is fair. I mean, he did save his life. But, you know, so the two of them end up going to an aquarium together and just start watching the fish. And then Cage recalls the poem that he sees at the victim's house earlier in the movie, which was like, do fish have dreams or something like that, right?
Right.
And they start talking about that for a minute, and then they're just sitting there, and the music starts to swell, and Cage just does like a little laugh, like a huh, and then it cuts to credits. Like, just,
yep.
And then that's it. So what did you get from that, Michael? What did you take away from that ending?
I think it was like you mentioned earlier. I think it's just Cage recognizing the cycle is going to repeat, or you know, it's there. Him and Chavez are flipped. What you would expect, right? The ex-con guy that was drowning in prison in the first scene,
yeah,
has a job. He mentions he's been clean for over a year, I think, or something like that. And he's like, you know, meets his, the guy that saved his life, and he's really kind and grateful and all this stuff. And here's Cage, a police officer who's done absolutely terrible things, but got clean, right? There's like this, like in that little montage at the end there where everything gets solved in 30 seconds. We also see him get received like a commendation from the police department. His girlfriend's pregnant. They're all sober, like, right? He's like, oh, we'll stick with sparkling water. Haha. Like, there's that weird scene after the ceremony and stuff. But then he's right back where he was, and he's relapsed, and he's being terrible person again. Yeah, and I think that was just like the futility of it all. Haha. And then cut to credits.
Right. Which is a very Herzogian thing to do as well. It's a very Werner Herzog thing. I wish he had narrated some of this movie, actually. I mean, he does make a voice cameo. I don't know if you heard that.
I don't think I did.
He's the voice on the answering machine at Eva Mendez's house, I think, in her penthouse. I don't know. As soon as it started playing, I heard that thick German accent. I was like, oh, that's Werner Herzog. That's nice. And let's not forget, Werner Herzog was also the villain of Jack Reacher, and it was awesome. But
yes, he was. Yep.
just throwing that out there as a random trivia fact. It's great. Go watch Jack Reacher. Yeah, we haven't even talked about the best line in this movie, actually, which is towards the end. When he's in Exhibit's house and there's a big gunfight, and then Cage, and you know, Exhibit's still alive, Cage is still alive, but the guys who came to shoot them are dead. And Cage says, "Shoot him again! Shoot him again!" And Exhibit's like, "Why?" And Cage is like, "His soul is still dancing." And it pans over, and you see the guy breakdancing over his body.
Yeah, that was some David Lynch shit.
Shoot him again.
What fool?
His soul's still dancing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And then they kill him, and I guess I should have put it together then, because I think an iguana crawls past his body.
Yes.
So it's all coming together now, Mike.
Maybe I actually
like this movie. Changes everything. It all hinges on the iguana.
Exactly. The iguana makes or breaks this entire movie. But other scenes, Mike, that stood out to you? The spoon story, perhaps? This very heartfelt moment between Cage and Eva Mendez.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah,
which also felt like him lying.
Well, he does come back with a spoon later. Although I think he says it's not the same spoon. But it's just it's a very long scene, and it's, you know, it's a funny-ish scene. It feels sort of funny, but also like emotional at the same time. It like really straddles a line there. Then there's another story where while Cage is like cracked out, he's just telling a story about how one of the football players transforms into an elk.
Hey, did I ever tell you a story about Nigga Elk? Nigga Elk, yeah? I was watching TV, the game, right? Ronaldo Hayes, he got tossed the ball and he was running with it. He was running. He jumped over three linebackers in midair. He sprouted antlers like a gazelle. Like an elk. He landed again. He ran. He scored a touchdown.
That's the crack talking.
Hey, listen, I'm not worried about you, so don't be concerned about me. Because I'm not concerned if you're not concerned, so don't worry, because I'm not really concerned.
I'm worried, because if you drop dead, I'm the motherfucker they come looking for.
Easy,
understand?
Easy, because I'm not easy eat.
And that was pretty wild. And there's just so much here, man. There's so many great lines in this movie. I think, you know, His Soul is Still Dancing is probably my favorite line. There's actually one line that I think speaks to everything about Cage's character, which is when he's talking to his dad after he's been suspended from the police. And he says to him, a man without a gun is not a man. And I feel like that tells you a lot about Cage's character and about his worldview. But I'm also a big fan of his other line, which my other favorite line of the movie, which is whatever I take is prescription, except for the heroin. It's lines like that that I feel like clue you into the fact that this movie is like meant to be like kind of funny.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I did appreciate the fact that every time he shows up at Eva Mendez's apartment and she has a client there, they just rob them. Ricky pretends to be her pimp, even though he's just her boyfriend.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What did you think of the relationship between Cage and Eva Mendez, Mike? I feel like they had a lot more chemistry here than they did in Ghost Rider.
Yeah, they did. I don't know. It was just one of those, like, these two people are bound for just like a car crash, disaster, train wreck and we're just kind of stuck to watch it. It's sort of like was that Wild at Heart with Nick Cage and Laura Dern, right? Where it's just these two. Oh, in this one, it's much more. They're just debaucherous, evil people, kind of thing, doing some bad stuff. And you see, it's just they're pedal to the metal towards a cliff, and they're just not going to stop. Yeah. But so in this,
break it down, baby.
Yeah. But in this movie, like we have like, oh no, it's gonna. We have that short montage or whatever, the resolution where it's like, oh man, everything turned around for them. It's gonna be great.
Right.
And
then Cage starts to relapse. But it seems like Eva Mendes is in a pretty good place. Like, she's the one who wanted to go to rehab in the first place.
Right.
And it seems like she has stuck with it, at least, and she's pregnant. And, you know, she seems like she's doing well. Cage is the one who has kind of relapsed. Although, do you see him taking the drugs towards the end in the hotel room? Or is he hasn't taken them yet before he gets stopped by the guy from the beginning?
You know, I don't know. I think I was all in the implication, Mike.
Maybe. But I feel like I think it's meant to be read either way. Like maybe him laughing, like it's him realizing that, like, you know, he doesn't need to take the drugs anymore. Or like he's a better person now for it or whatever.
That's true.
Yeah. Who knows? I guess I think it can be read in a lot of different ways. Other scenes in the movie, any performances you want to give a shout out to? I'm a big fan of Shea Whigham in this movie. I'm a big fan of Shea Whigham in general, but I feel like in this movie, he only has like two scenes and he's hilarious both times.
Yeah.
Where he says it's like recurring bit where he just keeps saying, oh yeah.
And then when he shuts and walks out into the hallway and comes back in and says it again. It's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
But no, I don't really think there's any, I mean, everyone's doing a good job. It's just that Cage overpowers everybody else in this movie.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Michael Shannon is here. He's funny for a second, like his one scene. He runs like the evidence room, and Cage wants him to steal drugs, I think, and he just won't do it because there's cameras now.
Right.
That's it. That's his whole arc. That's the whole character.
Yeah. He's only in like two scenes, and a lot of these people are only in a couple of scenes of the movie because this is really Cage's movie. In a story that doesn't really go anywhere. It's a lot of different subplots kind of fighting for screen time.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like some of the time. And I like that. I like the kind of like laid back casual storytelling aspect of it. It does like, to me, that's a lot of what Big Lebowski is and a lot of what Inherent Vice is. Like, those are movies that are actually, I mean, I think Big Lebowski is a very tightly plotted movie. It's just very complicated and like it goes into a lot of different directions. And I think this movie is similar to that, except it's not tightly plotted. It is just like,
it just wanders.
You know, I think one of the interesting things about this movie is that Cage is bad in every sense of the word, but he's actually a pretty good detective. Like, he's able to figure out the mystery on his own. He's able to gather the witnesses and all that stuff. And he's able to, you know, and he's like, the only thing keeping him from being a good detective is all of his other stuff.
Going on. All the crack he smokes.
All the drugs that he's on, yeah, and all the addictions that he has come to. But, you know, I think for the most part, like, he's actually like pretty good at being a detective in the movie. Like, I think it's interesting that he's written that way. Cause I feel like, you know, especially in, like, the original Bad Lieutenant, I feel like, you know, he's, you know, bad at, like, every aspect of his job and his life. And in this movie, I feel like Cage is actually a very competent detective who's just been being, like, destroyed by these addictions.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, though. I mean, because he's a good detective, quote unquote, in the fact that he's able to plant the evidence on exhibit in order to get him to go. Right? Like, he unravels who it is and finds him and all that stuff, but then he makes him smoke from his crack pipe so it could be the one with the DNA on it, right? Like,
right. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so a good detective to an extent.
Yeah, as far as, like, looking at the records would be.
Right, like problem, like solving things, like you being able to figure things out, like put two and two together and all that stuff.
Yeah,
he is a bad lieutenant. Let's not lose sight of that, Mike.
No, you're right. I did appreciate that scene right after they bust exhibit, like they break into his house or whatever with the cops, and it's him and Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer's just like, all right, so say he reaches for the gun and we just blow this guy away.
Right.
Like, just trying to plan his murder.
Yeah, and in that moment, it almost feels like Val Kilmer might be a worse lieutenant than Nicolas Cage is. And
is such a thing even possible?
It could be. Bad Lieutenant 2, Port of Call Val Kilmer, is going to be wild, man. I'm telling you.
Can't wait. Coming soon. 2020.
Anyway, so are there any other scenes, Mike, that you wanted to talk about? Anything that jumps out to you in any particular way? Or should we move on to Netflix reviews?
No, I think let's hear what the people have to say.
Let's hear what the people have to say about Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. These are the Netflix and Letterboxd reviews for this movie. I got a 5-star review here from Netflix. Things begin rather routinely, courtesy of L.A. Law writer William Finkelstein, but quickly transmogrify into truly Herzogian madness. An alligator's wild-eyed lament over a road-killed lover. I don't know where he got that from, but sure.
I believe it.
The best use of "oh yeah" since Yellow.
Wow.
Yellow. Yeah, that's a good cut. That's a good deal.
Yeah.
And the most egregious eyebrow indicating since Cuffs. Herzog isn't afraid to ask the tough questions either. Questions like, do fish dream? Doesn't everyone have a lucky crack pipe? What are these iguanas doing on my coffee table? And should we shoot him again? And of course, the answer to that last one is yes, because his stole is still dancing.
Outrageous. 5 stars. Absolutely outrageous.
On the flip side, here's a 1-star review of Bad Lieutenant Porter Call New Orleans. Have always enjoyed Nicolas Cage's movies, but this one is a bad one. Over the top foul language, a little of that can go a long way. Sexuality rating? You are kidding. He had sex with a hooker right in the movie. The language and sex act ruined this movie.
It's our old friend of the show.
Yeah, we haven't heard from this friend in a while, I feel
yeah.
like. But I love when good old Virgin Years comes by to tell us that the movies that we're the R-rated movies that we are watching have bad language in them.
Good old Temperance Virgin Years.
Yeah, you would think Temperance Virgin Ears would avoid a movie that was titled Bad Lieutenant. It's in the name. He's going to be a bad lieutenant. Watch Good Lieutenant if you want to see a good lieutenant, you know? That's all there is.
Yeah, you got no one but to blame but yourself, Temperance.
All right, here's a 3-star review from Letterboxd. Imagine the scene. We're in a retirement home. A woman wheels an older woman in a wheelchair into her room. The door closes, and behind it is Nicolas Cage, shaving with an electric razor. He then proceeds to talk about a murder case. The elderly asks to talk to his superior. Cage states he has not slept in 3 days and is having trouble remaining courteous. So the most rational thing he decides to do is take out the woman's oxygen tube and then threaten her helper with a gun. And to bring it all home, he tells her to drop dead and calls her the C word. What a movie. All right, now here's a 4-star review of Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans from Letterboxd. A difficult movie to evaluate. It is like the Showgirls of crime dramas. It's a film that kind of transcends notions of quality.
Oh my God.
In no small part due to Nicolas Cage. I can't tell if his performance has good or bad. It is only cagey. And also has elements of satire where it's not clear whether everyone involved was actually in on the joke. One thing for sure, though, it was very entertaining. There are 2 distinct scenes of pure Herzogian madness in particular, which are simply amazing. I feel like that Showgirls thing was a revelation for you, Mike. You that really got you.
Yeah, that's like the perfect description of this movie, I think. The Showgirls of cop dramas.
Yeah, there it is. Here's a 1-star review of Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. What? Bad Lieutenant? How about bad movie?
Zing.
Why did Nicolas Cage do this film? This is his worst. This is putting a valued actor's chops in a low-budget film with no real story. It was like Bradley Cooper in Bending All the Rules.
Holy shit.
What a deep cut.
Wow.
The reviewers were the deep cuts this time. Cage has done a lot of great films, but this flick was a huge flop. That's my opinion. Like other reviewers, I feel like I wasted 2 hours of my time, except that I fast-forwarded through that last half hour. Should have started sooner.
Damn.
Which means he missed a lot of the best stuff, but, you know, oh well.
Their loss.
It's a shame. Here's another 1-star review of Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans from Netflix. Living in New Orleans, I was excited to see a lot of the shots done on scene. Beyond that, the movie was pretty painful to watch. Cage couldn't have under or overacted his role more. I am still trying to figure out which he did, but either way, it felt bad. Supporting roles by Longoria and Kilmer left me further unimpressed. Mixed up his Avas there, I think. Bland acting, uncompelling stories, a predictable and unexciting plot from the get-go, taking its desultory path around a family's murder, where Cage does live up to the film's title in a bad cop role, using drugs, manipulating anyone he can for self-preservation. It is tough to really know any of the character's motivations, and there is no salient character evolution. The movie ends, you go, huh, and wish you'd spent your time doing something else. And now finally, Mike, I have one last one. One-star review of Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, which I think sums up every argument from the detractors of this movie. Don't waste your time. Watch the original with Harvey Keitel. Boring.
Wow.
Almost said Harvey Weinstein for a second there.
Ooh, so look good. Tough room, huh? Tough crowd.
Hey, no respect. No respect at all. Hey. Don't mind us. We're just loosening our ties and pretending we're Rodney Dangerfield.
Yes.
It's a Nicolas Cage podcast.
It's an audio medium.
Anyway, I think that wraps up our talk on Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. Is there any last thoughts that you want to leave us with?
No.
That was succinct and to the point. I will say I really enjoy Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. I think it's a lot of fun if you're on its wavelength. And if you're not on its wavelength, then I don't think you would find it as fun as I do. But
yeah, I think I missed it by that much.
Just a little bit. Yeah. And that's a shame. But it is a... it is arguably the movie that this podcast was made for. You know,
That's true.
You know, if I double featured Vampire's Kiss and Bad Lieutenant in one day, Mike, and it changed me forever. So that's
here we are.
Here we are, 55 episodes later. So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of our podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio. If you are listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review, help support this podcast, and Filmbook, take part in our Patreon campaign. You can find that at patreon.com/filmbook. Now, any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you know about in the title of your email because we produce just so many different sorts of track. We would love to hear from you. Now, join us in 2 weeks for another episode of Complete Works, where we are talking a movie that was pretty huge for me when I was 16. Mike, I don't know if this was huge for you either, but we are talking Kick-Ass next week.
Or two weeks from now. This is a movie.
I tell you, you didn't have the same... didn't have that same impact for you.
I don't think this is a movie that changed my life in any way.
No, I mean, I wouldn't say it was a life-changing movie. It was just a pretty big movie when I was 16. It was a movie I was really excited about. It was a movie I really liked and I really enjoyed. I saw this movie twice in theaters. I had to sneak in both times because I was underage.
Wow.
We'll talk about that when we get to it. Plus, you can keep an eye out for Film Bookcast, where we are talking either Ready Player One, A Quiet Place, I Love Dogs, whatever Mike gets a chance to see.
Yeah, life's a struggle right now, everyone.
Because I've seen pretty much everything. So whatever he sees... You know, I don't even know what we're reviewing next week. It's a mystery, man.
Stand by for the Rampage podcast.
God, I hope not. You just made us review Pacific Rim Uprising. I really hope.
Look, man,
you don't bang on giant monsters 2 weeks in a row.
Way to put me on blast.
Anyway, thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage. See ya.